शिला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री देवजी गोपाल की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतन की जय, श्री वेणु गीत की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि। सो pranam to all of you, good evening to all the ones connected online as well. And we are continuing today with our series of lectures concerning Sri Venu Gita, or the song of the flute. Whether the song that emanates from Krishna's flute or the song that the gopis sing about the song of Krishna's flute. So the song of songs, another song of songs we have here. Song about the song, all of which comes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is another song in itself. So that's the dynamic we follow, no? Song inside the song, inside the song, lost and found in that type of world. So today we are continuing examining verse number 17. I think we will finish today, second part of verse 17. Today's class number 20. So first of all, before doing a recap, let's first recite the verse in itself, since it's the same verse as yesterday. So we can recite the verse and then do the recap from yesterday and then continue unfolding today's content. So the verse in Sanskrit says like this: Vasanta tilak mitra asyusha. Purna pulindya udugaya padabjaraga Shri Kunkumena Daitastana Manditena Tadarshanasmara Rujastrina Rushitena Limpantya Anana Kuchesu Jahustadadhim. So, translation says, the aboriginal woman of the Vrindavan area become disturbed by lust when they see the grass marked with reddish kumkum powder, endowed with the color of Krishna's lotus feet. This powder originally decorated the breasts of his beloveds, and when the aboriginal woman smear it on their faces and breasts, they feel satisfied and give up all anxiety. So, yesterday we began analyzing this verse with some main general ideas, so we'll do some recap of yesterday's lecture, and today we will continue. So here the gopis are having a vision in the distance of these pulindis, another name for the aboriginal woman. We mentioned that these are ladies who, according to the social sensibilities of the time, were labeled as outcasts. But despite their so-called fallen birth, they were able to attain the highest goal. So it's a very important point that the Bhagavatam makes, not only here, but in many sections throughout its narrative, with different examples of people who are, as we mentioned, of low, quote-unquote, low birth, even demoniac, asuric birth, like Pritrasura or Prahlad, and so many others. But in contact with bhakti, in contact with love coming from an embodiment of that particular love in their lives, the potential of those particular souls starts to blossom gloriously. So that gives us, not only gives hope to the pulindis, but especially to us, the Western pulindis, if you will. So there is hope. No matter how fallen you are, how fallen is your birth, or maybe even if you have a high birth, but you are especially fallen because of having a high birth, that can happen. Bhakti has the potential to go descend from the highest realm to the lowest bottom point of existence, and from there redeem whoever is willing to be redeemed. We have a part to play in the whole equation as well. So these pulindis have also some connection with the gopis, as we mentioned. Sometimes they go to the forest to collect wood or roots or flowers, and sometimes they give those flowers to the gopis, and the gopis use those flowers or other forest ingredients to prepare different offerings in the lila. So there is some connection between the gopis and the pulinda woman. And again, the Acharyas mentioned, that's their great fortune, as we will continue unpacking today. The great fortune of the Pulindis is the sadhu sangha they obtain from the gopis on the daily basis, and from them they hear different stories from Krishna, and they become attracted to that, to the point of, as we mentioned here, just seeing something that has a connection with Krishna, and they udipana, that becomes like a stimulant for evoking prema being evoked in their hearts. To hear a particular sequence is presented, first of all, according to what the verse says, this kumkum or saffron paste or red powder was originally in the body of one of Krishna's beloveds. Then, second point, it went to Krishna's feet, and then those feet went to the forest with that kumkum on their foot soles, and then eventually that kumkum ended up in the grass of the forest of Vrindavan. So then these Pulindis saw that, became ecstatic, and first of all they sniffed the kumkum. Then it was not enough to calm them down, because as it bears mentioned, they were agitated by Cupid, and we clarified this was not mundane Cupid. There is a Cupid on this side of the world, but it is a divine Cupid, who is the Cupid of Cupids. One name of Krishna is Madan Mohan, which means the one who conquers Cupid. Cupid conquers everyone, and Krishna is the one who conquers everyone. So in that direction, we are speaking about cupidity here. So we mentioned how this Pulindis got this kumkum, and they sniffed that first, but it was not enough. Cupid still was throwing some arrows on them, so they wrapped that on their faces without caring for how they looked, again, without caring for public opinion, but thinking about increasing their approach. We gave the example of Sindhu Hanuman in this connection. Remember the story of Hanuman bathing on Sita's Sindhur, no? This red line she had, this powder. And after that, even that was not enough, so they put that powder on their hearts, on their chests. And eventually they attain the condition of being Purna, or Purnaktva, which means completeness or full satisfaction. Again, the power of contacting something that contacted Krishna. They were not seeing Krishna directly, they were not embracing Krishna directly, but they enter in contact with something which enter in contact with him. So try to imagine the power of that. So we concluded yesterday's lecture by also mentioning the name of Krishna invoked in this verse is Urugaya. So many different meanings as usual, different layers of possibilities with each name of Krishna. So Urugaya means he who Gaya sings expansively, or who sings through the flute in an all-pervading way, in the whole branch and more. Or he who is glorified by selected song, by selected poetry, a similar name to that of Uttama Shloka. And in that context, it is mentioned, they are being he and Balaram, which is both of them are generally mentioned in these verses, glorified by the other gopas through kirtan, spontaneous composition. Or Urugaya means he whose glorification is the best. So the glorification about the best is the best type of glorification, basically. So that was the last thing we mentioned yesterday, and we concluded our meeting with one question, basically, one riddle or whatever, like, who is the gopi that in this verse is mentioned by other gopis whose kumkum ended up on Krishna's feet and eventually on the Pulindis' bodies? Is she someone in particular? First question. Then we'll see if some other questions arise. So today we'll try to solve that that one among other riddles. So let's go to what our acharyas mentioned in this connection. First of all, let's go to one, not Purva Paksha, but some version which is not the one that is mostly embraced by our Gaudiya Acharyas, and is the version of Balabhacharya. Balabhacharya is one great commentator and the founder of his own Sampradaya, or his own school of thought, which is not ours. So we appreciate his commentary, but in some occasions there will be some slight respectful disagreements, and each one will turn their own path in that connection. No? So this is one of those cases. And all this will have to do with, okay, who is this gopi? And most of the commentators will analyze the phrase Sri Kunkumena. So Kunkumena means Kunkum, this powder, and Sri. Sri can mean 108 things and more. That's the beauty and the overwhelming possibilities of Sanskrit. So Sri, of course, can be beauty in itself, can be a splendor, or can refer to someone by the name Sri. So Balabhacharya takes that route. He says, this saffron, this powder, this kumkum, belonged to Sri. And for him, Sri is Lakshmi Devi, the consort of Narayan, who has love for Urugaya's feet. Lakshmi has expressed some attraction towards Krishna, as we know. No? I mean, not different from Narayan, we know. Narayan, Vishnu and Krishna are same person in tattva, in ontological reality, but in bhava, or in the mood in which they are, they present different emotional dispositions. And so Vishnu is more, he's a more sober fellow, if you will, in Vaikuntha, being surrounded by Aishwarya Bhakti, which is a kind of more reverential approach, aware, being oneself, being aware you are God, so you behave accordingly. If you are in front of God, as our Guru Maharaj likes to say, what you will say? Imagine you are walking and God appears in front of you and you know it's God. So you will say,
oh God.
Oh my God. That's basically the way you will address the situation. Oh my God, here is God. So that's the type of approach that characterizes the devotees of Vishnu and Narayan. And he, Atman Prapadyante Tam Sataiva Bhajami, he reciprocates accordingly. There are some people who want to relate with him like that. He exists in a form that perfectly fits that mood. But Krishna is something else, as we say. No? Vishnu Narayan had more to do with this prototype of God. But even Paramatma has more to do with what we understand of God. But let's say Vishnu also. But Krishna is, again, something else, not something less. For us, Krishna is, as we always say, no? Krishna is not an aspect of God, but God is an aspect of Krishna. In the words of Srila Prabhupada, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a very interesting concept. The Supreme Personality, if I speak about Shyamananda, happy birthday, Shyamananda. So, I say, I will speak about Shyamananda, but I will speak today about the Supreme Personality of Shyamananda. What do you understand by that? There is something special. It's one thing is to say, I will speak about you and you, or I will speak about your Supreme Personality, of the Supreme Personality of you, which means your most, the core aspect of your being, the most essential possibility about who all you can be. So that's how Krishna is described, the Supreme Personality of God. So when God attains the peak of his personality, now he goes the deepest possible into who he is, to the point that the idea of God somehow is transcended. Remains somewhere else, somewhere in Vaikuntha, but he becomes who he is, basically. So, the idea that Lakshmi, even though he has a mood to relate with Narayan in Vaikuntha, at a certain point she becomes attracted to know and experience all that her Narayan is about in the form of Krishna, if you will. But as we know, she's not able to enter that arena because it has some price to pay. There is some price to pay. There is some change, transmutation of identity. Now, if you want to relate with one aspect of God or the other, that has to be done according to certain parameters. You have to behave accordingly for that to happen, for that to manifest. And if you are not willing to do that, no problem. Nobody will force you. But you cannot pretend, you cannot like demand entrance into that realm. It's like if you say, I want to relate with whatever, the king, but I would like to treat him as I like. I say, no, you are not able to do that. There are certain rules and regulation, and most probably you don't even have that opportunity. But even if you have the chance of an interview with the king, first you will receive a list of 108 do's and don'ts. How to address him, how to greet him, what to do, what not to do, how to sit, what not to say. And if you agree with all that, you sign the contract, okay, you can go. Of course, in the context of Krishna, there are not so many of those types of rules, like do like this, do like that, pertains more maybe to Vaikuntha in one sense, but there are some rules at the same. There are some, if you will, how to say, sensibilities, or like what Guru Maharaj will say, the rules that naturally express out of love. Love breaks all rules, transgresses all rules. All rules are meant to attain love. When you attain love, love makes its own rules. So there are still rules, rules of the game. And Lila is a game, it's divine play. And a play has rules. It's not that you just can do whatever you like. Lila doesn't happen like this. It's not that in Lila, again, there are rules. Gopis cannot say certain things in front of Valar. That's a rule that happens in that way. And certain things, like, you will never see that, I don't know, Nanda and Yasoda got divorced or something. There are things that cannot happen. And nobody will die from the Brajavasis in the Lila. Things like, there are certain things that cannot happen. So that's the rules of the game. That makes the game interesting. The game, an interesting game is not some in which you can do whatever you like. It's like if I say to Kishore, let's play chess. But I will move the pieces as I like. It's like, there's no game. If I just can do like this and this, and you do whatever you like also. I mean, the game never started. But if you can only move like this, and you can only... Those rules seem limiting, but actually they are facilitating the experience of the game. You follow the point. So similarly, there is place for this type of sensibility. So going back on track, Balabhacharya mentions that Lakshmi, the very personification of Vaikuntha Bhav, if you will, she also has some love for Krishna, some attraction from his feet. So he concludes the word tree here refers to her. And the woman, the Pulindis, Balabhacharya said, gave up their anguish? Okay. By a special favor of the Lord because of the entrance, pravesh, means entrance, of Lakshmi through the saffron. Now she entered into that saffron, Lakshmi, somehow. And so these Pulindis gave up the mental pain and hence became successful. So that's his commentary on this section, Balabhacharya Ki Jai. Before disagreeing with him, we offer his pranam, our pranam to him. So he is of this idea. Lakshmi is the one who somehow enter in touch with that powder. I mean, not by having direct association with Krishna, because it's not happening, as we mentioned, but somehow pravesh, she entered into that powder. He doesn't explain further. No, there is no further explanation that you have to figure out what he meant. But for us Gaudiyas, we beg Balabhacharya's permission to respectfully disagree. And we will see what's the meaning that we take from the word Sri. So let's begin with what Srila Jiva Goswami says in his commentary, because he's one of the main ones who will reveal who is this Gopi. So I will read a part of his commentary. So he quotes he also goes to the term Daita Stana Manditena, which means adorned on the breast of developed. So developed is mentioned there. So Jiva Goswami said, with this quote, the gopis who speak this verse say, a lover like him cannot possibly be without a girlfriend. That's a good definition of who Krishna is. Dear Lalita, he's a boy who cannot exist without a girlfriend. Not because he's like codependent or something like this and he needs someone, if not he's like hollow or not whole, but because he's so attractive and the very Sringar Murtimam, the very personification of beauty and romantic love. So, not even one girlfriend is enough. I mean, basically. And of course, with all this, they are projecting, we are to be those. Then the Gopi thing, Jiva Goswami says, saffron is the color of the redness of Urugaya's lotus feet. And because of that, which has a special beauty, that should only belong to us. First, he says that he understands the word tree as beauty, and beauty in connection to the feet of Krishna. And they say those feet should only belong to us. That's an expression of spiritual mamata or possessiveness. Possessiveness on this side of the road is unbecoming, but there is place for developing possessiveness in connection to God. So as we always say, Bhakti is not about rejecting anything, but it's about learning to integrate all our present tendencies with the Absolute in the center. I mean, the Absolute is already in the center. We are out of center. We have to align with the center. And we are not expected basically to reject anything, but to integrate whatever is there in connection to the center. So finally, Jiva Goswami says, and with this he reveals who is this gopi, the saffron brought a special resplendence from the breasts of some secret beloved. And with this the gopis imply, says Sri Jiva, only she has that sort of good fortune, the fact of engaging in the sport of love with him, but ours is much farther than very far. And who is this she? According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Sri means Sri Radha. Vrindavaneshwari Sri Radha Thakurani Ki Jai. So Sri Radha is Krishna's main consort in Sri Vrindavan, as we know. They are called one divine couple, basically, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So let's share some further reasoning about why they reached this conclusion. To begin with, the idea of Sri referring to Lakshmi for us in our school cannot be possible in the sense if we want to think that Lakshmi had some sort of interaction with Krishna, because again, Lakshmi has had no possibility of joining Krishna. We know the famous story narrated in the Puranas that Lakshmi wanted to enter Rasa Lila, the divine circular dance mandal of Sri Hari, and she starts to engage in different penance, tapasya, with the intention of, while thinking this is the means to access such a realm. So one day Krishna sees her stopping eating, wearing white sari, like very, like renounced lady, while actually she's Lakshmi, which means she's a lady of opulence, or the mistress of fortune. I mean, she's surrounded by all Aishvarya, and she's looking like a Vrindavan widow or something, with one torn sari and just taking some roots from the forest. So Krishna's like, Lakshmi, are you Lakshmi? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lakshmi. What's going on? Did Narayan lose his job or something? No, I just want to join Rasa Lila. Guru Maharaj nicely say, Krishna say, well, but that this is not the method. Oh, really? Yes, much easier than this. At least for Krishna, that was easier. For Lakshmi, it was another dimension. And as we know, she say, well, so what's the method? And Krishna say, well, first you have to leave Narayan, your pati, your husband. And of course, at that point, Lakshmi was already collapsing. No, like, I cannot conceive of leaving Naraya. I mean, I'm sure his eternal consort and his primary Shakti. But Krishna continued. That was just the preface to the whole equation. So he said, first you leave Naraya, then you go to Vrindavan, you marry some gopa there, and on top of that, then you have to leave that gopa and run to me when I play the flute and join me in Rasa Lila. So two rendezvous, no rendezvous, no, how do you say, yeah, whatever. Two type of divine cheating and then joining me. For Lakshmi was too much. So she said, I cannot do that. So in one sense, sometimes she's depicted to make the point, she's till today, in Belvan, which is one of the 12 forests of Vrindavan, till today she's executing tapasya without success. Because that's not the way of entering Rasa Lila. So she's excluded of the possibility of being, for us, the source of this kumkum. And Sri also, the Acharya say, cannot mean Rukmini, which is some other consort of Hari. Because again, Rukmini is not related to the Vrindavan pastime. So all this is taking place in the forest of Braj. Rukmini is a queen, one of the wives of Krishna outside of the Braj, living with him eternally in Dwarka. So, and in this connection, Jiva Goswami quotes a verse from the Matsya Purana to show that who is presiding on these different places and how naturally in Vrindavan the presiding figure in this case is Sri Radha. It's her force. So he says, Matsya Purana says, Varanasyam Vishalakshi Bimala Purushottame Rukmini Dwarabhatim Tu Radha Vrindavane Vane. So in Varanasi, Vishalakshi presides. In Puri, Bimala presides. In Dwaraka, Rukmini presides. And in Vrindavan, Radha presides. So that's what Jiva Goswami mentions regarding from whose chest this Kumkum comes from. And then, in this connection, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is a later commentator in connection to Jiva Goswami, he further confirms this point. He says, although here developed is only Sri Vrishabhanu Kumari, which is another name for the daughter Kumari of Vrishabhanu Raj, Sri Radha, although here, in this verse, developed, the Daita mentioned below, is only her, not honoring her, or in other words, not being her mentioned directly by the gopis who are speaking this verse, is only due to an upsurge of passion. So the gopis who speak this verse are affected by divine passion, and because of that, they are not taking the time to mention Sri Radha directly. That could be another way of saying why Sri Radha's name is not mentioned, at least in this verse in the Bhagavad. There are many reasons why she's not mentioned at all, which, as we always say, that's a very particular notion, because if I tell you the ultimate figure and character and the ultimate converging point in this book is this person, and you read the book and say, but this person was never mentioned only once. How is that? That's a unique, how do you say, genre of literature. I mean, you tell me this is the main character of the book and the person is never mentioned. So how you reach that conclusion if you don't, the name is never made, not even mentioned? So of course there are many, many things that the Gaudiyas will say in that connection. So here we have one of those. We won't enter into details of the others. And also Srinath Chakravarti, Kavi Karnapur's guru, also in his commentary confirms this verse refers to Radha. So there seems to be consensus among our teachers among related to who this Kumkum belongs to. So in other words, this verse, of course, speaking about the Pulindis and Krishna's lotus feet and so many things, but in one sense speaking about Sri Radha Thakurani, her feet, which have the power even through the slightest contact to induce complete attraction for Krishna. Because again, the Pulindis are seeing this powder in the grass and becoming totally like affected by love. But originally, that powder comes from Sri Radha's heart. Of course, Krishna is intermediate, he's in between. No? It touches him, then goes to the grass, then goes to the Pulindis. But originally, according to what our Acharya said, this is coming from Sri Radha's heart, basically. And of course, it is mentioned also in this connection that what is the type of love she personifies, and she's called as Mahabhav Sarupini, which is she is the very embodiment of the highest possible type of ecstasy. We won't enter into the detail now, but Prem is divine love, and divine love has so many further subdivisions like Sneha, Mana, Pranaya, Rag, Anurag, Bhav, Mahabhav, Rudha, Mahabhav, Adirudha, Mahabhav, Modana, Mahabhav, Madana, Mahabhav. So the ultimate like refinement of that is called Madanakya Mahabhav, if you will. Adirudha Madanakya Mahabhav. Or Adirudha Madana Mahabhav. And Sri Radha is called Mahabhav Surupini, or the very deity, personified deity, of that most condensed and refined form of love. Indeed, in Ujjval Nilamani, Srila Rupa Goswami, when he's speaking about this type of super ecstasy, Madana Mahabhav, he quotes this verse from the Bhagavatam to refer to Sri Radha, who is the personification of that, and the effect it has. Try to imagine, I mean, if someone touches the powder that was in connection with someone and becomes totally infected of divine love, I mean, that's there's something in that powder. It's not only powder. So yeah, Mahabharata is there. So that on one side, no, we wanted to solve that particular question or riddle. Who is the gopi from whose heart the kumkum manifested? So before continuing at this point, any question? Generally, I do not ask for questions in this type of meetings. But at this point, you should have a question. If you are a good listener, there should be something here that you should be dying of contradiction inside of you, like dilemmas, drowning. I like to see how well nice students all of you are during all these weeks, how trained you are to think theologically and get the point.
How come they met if it's Urvaraka?
Very good. So that very same question Shyamananda asked me yesterday. The class ended and Shyamananda said, Maharaj. And I said, no, tomorrow is your birthday. Tomorrow I'll give you my birthday gift in the form of reply to that question. So he had to bear with that. Hopefully he was able to sleep last night. I don't know. That may be too much, but knowing Shyamananda. But he survived that, so I appreciate that. So yeah, that's the point. No? The very natural question should come at this point, which is, according to what we say from day one of the series, all this Bhagavad Gita is in the context of Puru Bharag. And Puru Bharag is the separation that the gopis feel from Krishna. And it's a separation in which they have not had official union with him yet. The relation has not been consummated. They only fell in love by hearing about him, by seeing him, by hearing the flute, some messages maybe in between, some WhatsApp here and there, but not official not official consummation of the relationship. So the point is, if this verse is saying the kumkum is coming from the breast of the beloved, and then that was came to Krishna's feet, means Krishna was meeting with that beloved, but that beloved should be a gopi, because again we are speaking about, and it's mentioned that this is Radha, so, but we are in Purvarag supposedly, so it's supposedly in Radha has not met Krishna yet first officially. You follow the logic, right? So this is the question. So what to do? The whole Bhagavad Gita is contradicting now. What to do? Dilemma. So Jiva Goswami shares some very interesting, clever way of dealing with this situation in his commentary. So we will share what he says and try, therefore, to harmonize this conundrum. So Jiva Goswami replies, the meeting between Radha and Krishna, because he already said the gopi was Radha, so, and the kumkum came to from that beloved who is Radha to Krishna. So there was some form of meeting, but which form of meeting? So the meeting between Radha and Krishna was possible during the day. So to begin with, here we are not speaking about nightly meetings, as it will happen in Rasa Lila and so on. Remember, when the relation gets consummated, that will happen in the night, Rasa Lila. One night and every night, this dancing and circle dancing. And then, as we mentioned some classes ago, the gopis will want to meet Krishna during the day also. And eventually, after the killing of Aristasura and the manifestation of Shyamakunda, Radhakunda, that starts to happen at midday. So now, but here, Srila Jiva Goswami is speaking, this meeting happened during the day. So before the meetings during the night and the other ones that came after during the day. But we will see it was a particular meeting. So the meeting between Radha and Krishna was possible during the day, since the Pulinda women were wandering about and the kumkum was still fresh, since they could smear it on their faces and breasts. So the conclusion was the Pulindis go to the forest during the day to pick, as we say, wood and things like this, and they found this kumkum in a fresh condition. It's a powder that if eventually becomes dry, may can become dry, and it's not possible to smear it. So they found it in a state which was again like a paste. No? Remember, it was not just powder. We say powder, but we mentioned it was like saffron paste. So it is say that they rubbed their body with that still fresh paste. So it means someone had it recently. So that means that was during the day. That's how Jiva Goswami reaches that conclusion. However, he says this meeting of Radha and Krishna was not intimate. Since, I mean, it's a way of saying every meeting of Radha and Krishna is intimate in one sense, but not the full like expression of the romantic meeting. He says, since this was not intimate, since this say it is said that the Rasa Lila was their first meeting. So that's like clearly established in Shastra. No? This circular dance, Rasa Lila was the consummation of the relation, where Purva Rag is over, if you want to put it in another terms. No? They are entering into another layer of separation. I mean, union first, and very soon separation when Krishna leaves the Rasa Mandal. So they will have Pravas, Man, and Prema Vaichidi, all the other possibilities of separation. Therefore, still there's something more to be said. Jiva Goswami said, therefore, this idea is obtained from this, how that meeting, because one would say, okay, there was a meeting during the day, but it was not intimate. So what happened in that meeting to not be considered intimate, and how this powder came from went from one place to the other, if you will, from Radha to Krishna. So Jiva Goswami shares what happened, visualizes, shares his own samadhi. On certain occasion, Krishna played the flute. So of course this is during this time of the Purva Rag. On certain occasion, Krishna played the flute. Radha was attracted and fell in a swoon. Swoon, you say? Oh, like she lost consciousness and was on the verge of death also. By hearing the flute and wanting to meet Krishna. And a clashing of emotions happened inside her. Sometimes that creates this type of collapse which externally seems like fainting. Or like wanting to meet someone but having too many obstacles that not allowed for that to happen. So all that put together, too much emotion going on, collapse. So sometimes in India they call this Jivana Sandhi. Sandhi. I remember recently I was in Jagannath Puri. I think I was going to the train station to continue traveling to Mayapur. And the devotee who was accompanying me, we passed from one place. I don't know, we were riding, we were going somewhere else, but it was Jagannath Puri. And there was some big, like, place, and it said, Jivana Sandhi. So he's asking me, Maharaj, do you know what does it mean? I say, I can tell you what the words mean, but I'm not sure if it makes total sense. I say, what the words mean? So I say, well, Jivana means life, and Sandhi means like, how is it in English, like junction. So this like from one, when we go from one point to the other, one step to the other, there is some in between point. So that is like sandhi. When you speak about sandhyas also, like juncture. So life juncture. No? So, and he told me, yeah, that's a place for people who is leaving their bodies actually. No? And who are like transitioning into their next. How do you call it in English? There is a place where you receive like palliatory care, you call that? Palliative care, things like this. No? So they will call Jivana Sandhi, no? Like the juncture between one life and the next. Because, of course, in India it is understood that that's not the end of the story, but just entering another room, changing the vehicle. Next page of the chapter, however you may like to call it. So Sri Radha was in something like that, no? Jivana Sandhi. No? Almost about to transition to a next birth, if you will, want to put it. Of course, it never happens. Tragedy is not part of the Leela in that sense. So again, Krishna played the flute. Sri Radha lost consciousness, about to die. And Krishna somehow felt, this was happening. So he and she was on a swoon, she was unconscious, she was not like awake, if you will. And Krishna said that out of respect, Jiva Goswami said, for the purpose of abating.
Abating?
It says, Jiva Goswami said like that. Abating? Abating?
With
B? Long B. Well, for the purpose of counteracting the swoon, out of respect, Krishna touched Radha on the chest. And Radha's chest had saffron and was perspiring because she was on a swoon and too much emotion. So Krishna touched her on the chest with a petal that then touched his foot. So he touched her like with a petal, first contact. She was in a swoon. And with that touch, she was revived. And that petal then, of course, touched Radha's saffron paste and then went to Krishna's foot and touched Krishna's foot and became saffron marked. And Jiva Goswami said, then, because even at that time, Krishna's shyness had not completely dissipated in the unfolding of the relationship, he quickly went away from there. So it's not that there was some union, actual union, if you will. So Krishna went, saved Radha, if you will, from dying in separation, touched her with a petal. That petal with kumkum went to touch his feet. His feet were marked with kumkum. And she awoke and Krishna, so he left. He was too shy yet. No, like, again, you have to go to the human experience to also relate to this Nara Lila. Sometimes a boy and a girl are falling in love, but still there is some shyness and they this do something. Then, thus, Jiva Goswami says, when Krishna did this, of course the logic is the kumkum of Radha's body goes to his feet, to Krishna's feet, and then to the whole of Raj. So some way of poetically say, in this way Krishna is singing about the glories of Radha's love to the whole world. He takes a little bit of that which belongs to her, goes to his feet, and then he walks all over Vrindavan, leaving that kumkum here and there, like to announce. This is her position, basically. This kumkum is the sign of her love, because kumkum is also red powder, and red, you say it, you mentioned, you translate this raga in Sanskrit. As raga means anurag, or like deep attachment. So also this kumkum of Radha's heart represents her divine passion for Krishna, basically. Her raga, the passion, the sacred path, or passionate love, as Guru Maharaj will say. So Krishna takes that kumkum again, puts it in his feet, and he carries all along Braj to sing Radha's glories. And that's why the Pulindis, going back to the main characters, if you will, main, Radha is the main character in one way, but the Pulindis, that's why they get so affected by that, now that we get the full picture of the situation, because that kumkum represents the meeting of Radha and Krishna, although it was not, again, official meeting, so still officially she remains in Purvarag, but there was some form of meeting, and it's represented in that kumkum. So the Pulindis get extremely affected by that. That is one option, which is the one that was mostly defined by Srila Jiva Goswami as to why, how this kumkum reached the Pulindis, if you will, in all this sequence. And there's another possibility that is sometimes mentioned by some Vaishnavas, which is a more indirect one, if you will, but also charming. There are many verses in the scripture which mention how when Krishna goes to the forest, he goes barefoot, as we know. He doesn't want to use padukas, any type of shoes, because cows are going barefoot. I'm a cowherd, he says, I'm going barefoot, that's them. To the demise of Yashoda. No? She wants to put him something. And the gopis, everyone in Vrindavan is suffering because the feet of Krishna are, lotus-like. They are described as lotus feet. And the lotus, one of the different attributes is its softness. So it's very soft. So for example, in the Gopi Gita, the gopis say, Chalasi jat brajam chadaya pushum Nalina Sundaram Natati Padam Shila trinan kurai sidha pitina kalila tanmana kanta gachati. They say basically when you go out to the pastures with the cows and go barefoot, and we start to think about all these sorts in English pebbles and small rocks that are on the path, and we cannot avoid meditating on your soft lotus feet walking barefoot of them and the possibility of some injury, and our minds get deeply disturbed by the possibility of you experiencing the most minimum difficulty. Again, it seems extreme, but when you love someone extremely, you have those types of, the worst can be happening to that person, something like that, no? He's late, he didn't come on time, maybe he's on time yet, but you feel like, well, Yashoda feels like this, no? Krishna's on time, some days, generally he's not, but let's say he's on time, but Yashoda is asking why he has not returned today from the forest. Ananda Maharaj will say, oh, he's still on time, generally. Legal time for him to come is in half an hour yet. But for her, it's like maybe something happened. We have to, her maternal love is like overflowing, and that's love, what to do. And the very last verse of the Gopi Gita, that's the further idea in this connection. The Gopi say, Jati sujata charanamburu hamstanesu bhithasanai priyadadi mahi karakasesu tenata bimmatasitat bhyatatena kimsit kurpadi bhir brahmati bhir avanayusamna. So they say, your feet are so soft that when we think that you are walking barefoot in the forest, we would like to offer something soft for you to walk on. And we think about our bodies, and the softest part we have is our breasts. So they think, I would like to offer our breasts for you to walk on. But again, only with the idea, this is the softest part we find in our bodies. So we are just thinking about that we can, but interestingly they say, but your feet are so soft that in comparison, our breasts are like rocks and pebbles, are not soft at all. And they start crying. And they will start crying because they don't have anything that they can offer to Krishna for relieving him of walking barefoot with the softness of his feet on the floor. And they start to cry and cry out of pain. No? So the point is, this is the situation for the gopis. And it is said, as Sakyarati also was mentioning, that in those times, even today in some cases, the gopis used to wear kumkum in different parts of the body as a, not replacement, but they wouldn't use what today is known as choli, I don't know how you call that in English, like short t-shirt. I don't know what's the word, but yeah, it's like some word that ladies in India wear below, first, and then have the sari on, or whatever they use, and gopi dress, and so on. So sometimes they were not used to use that in the past, but they would cover their bodies with kumkum. And it was made like a paste, and it kind of replaced cloth. And it gave some protection from cold and other stuff. So the point is that the gopis are thinking here, oh, we would like to, remembering the softness of Krishna's feet and so on, we would like to cover his feet with this kumkum, so he's not suffering anything while wandering on the forest. But again, they are in Pur Barak, so they cannot relate to him personally, so they start to mentally offer that to Krishna. Now, we would like to offer that to Krishna, they offer that in their minds. Whatever you cannot do in your physical body, you can do in your mind. There is much more space, as our Guru Maharaj says. So it is said that they offer the kumkum, the idea will be in connection to this verse, because in this verse, the kumkum is there physically. So poetically, it is said, okay, the gopis were offering the kumkum to Krishna in their minds, but Krishna accepted the kumkum not only in from their minds, but literally it appeared on his feet, basically, something like that. And he's spreading that throughout Braj, showing to everyone, my feet are okay. I'm using that kumkum, so do not concern about this, the health of my foot soles. Everything is okay. I have the kumkum you were offering to me mentally. Like when Raghunath Das Goswami, the great Vaishnava one of the six Goswamis. There's one story that once, I think it's Raghunath Das Goswami, please you correct me if I'm wrong, that once he was offering his mind here, or sweet rice to Krishna, and in his mind, he was doing the whole thing in his mind. It is said in Archana that whatever you offer to the deity externally, you have to first offer it internally, mentally, for the offering to be complete. Because if you offer some, if you just move your physical hands like this, but your mind is not doing the offering, there's no offering. It's just like, but your mind is being offered in some other direction. And that's what Krishna says. And of course, that's a challenging thing. That's what Krishna says to Arjuna in the Gita, when Arjuna says, can I just engage my body in your service? Or do I also have to engage my mind? And of course, we know what Krishna says over and over again. Manmana, your mind to me. I want your mind. Because again, of course, we have to begin somewhere. And in the beginning, we may be engaged in bhakti on the bodily platform, chestarupa bhakti, bodily activities in connection with bhakti, but still the mind may be, as I say, have gone shopping somewhere else. So eventually, of course, we begin with something, trying to capture the senses in such a way that the mind is also aligned to that, and eventually the heart, also everything, all the functions can be offered comprehensively to Hari. So the point is that Raghunath Das Goswami was offering in his mind this sweet rice. He was doing the whole ritual internally. Externally, he was just seated and didn't have even like a grain of salt to offer. But internally, he was full of ingredients and paraphernalia. So he was offering a very tasty kheer or sweet rice. So he was thinking, oh, I don't know if it's too hot yet, because I just cooked that, prepared that. So I will just put the finger to see if it's too hot to offer to Krishna. So all this in the mind. So he touched in the mind with his finger. And it was hot. He got burned in the mind. But for his surprise, he opened his eyes and his physical finger was burned as well. So somehow you could say whatever happens in the mind, if something happened in the mind, if your mind is out of control, for example, I mean, we will see that in your face also. There's no escape from that. So something like this. Now, in this case, the gopis offered this, according to this particular possibility, offered this kumkum in their minds, and Krishna accepted that in his mind, but also that extended into the physical, quote-unquote, transcendental physicality of Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami, something else that he mentioned is who are the gopis who spoke this verse. Because we already mentioned who is the gopi, the origin of the kumkum, but who are the gopis speaking this verse? Jiva Goswami says the same gopis that spoke the third verse, in which it is said that some gopis spoke privately. So he just say that those same gopis spoke this verse, the ones of the verse number 3. And Baladevi Devabhushan, he interestingly mentions that Radha Sakis are speaking this verse. So the intimate friends of Sri Radha, who know where this kumkum is coming from, and of course they are lamenting for their own misfortune, but at the same time knowing where all this is coming from, they are appreciating the power of her swaminis, of their swamini, of their mistress on the pulindis. So, you have some extra thoughts to share? So, with your permission, you have some minutes yet? Basically this is the idea, no? That the pulindis got attained purnatva or completeness or success by connection with Sri Radha's kumkum. And of course the gopis going to the ones who are speaking the verse, the gopis who are lamenting here, basically they're saying, okay, this pulindis attain success, attain purnatva, attain completeness, but again, our pain is just increasing. There's still purvarag for us. We are less fortunate than all living beings put together. Something like this, the gopis here. Being lower even than the pulindis. Again, pulindis are apparently the lowest of the lowest in the social hierarchy, but the gopis feel themselves we are even below them. So here we have the classical comparison, appreciation, lamentation, and exponential growth of their purvarat, actually, which is drawing them closer and closer to the eventual consummation. So also something interesting is mentioned regarding the pulindis, because one can say, well, this pulindis, of course, Sri Radha is the personification of the highest love, so this pulindis touched the saffron paste and became ecstatic due to the power of Radha's, all that is connected to her, but to speak, it touched Krishna as well, so it's Maha Maha Prasad, like the manjaris who eat only those things that Sri Radha has eaten, but Sri Radha only eats after Krishna has eaten. So whatever the manjaris eats is remnant from both of them. So somehow pulindis are receiving that similar dual remnants, prasadi, from them. But is there any special background credit to assign to the pulindis as well? Yes, there is also. They are not just ordinary. Again, that's interesting. They appear as tribal, uncivilized women in the lila, but they have a very interesting background. So it is mentioned, and this is tied to one's history connected in the Ramayana. You know, yesterday we went to Ram Lila again with Sindur Hanuman. Today we are going back to Ayodhya. So make your backs. There we go. So it is said that in Ram Lila, when Sri Ramachandra was exiled into the forest for a good number of years, more than a decade, he was doing his banvas. Banvas means like residence bus in the ban, in the forest. At one point, different things happened. We know the story of a group of sages approaching Ramachandra, the sages of the forest of Dandaka. And they approached Ramachandra, as we know, and they asked him, what? We are attracted to you in Madhurya Bhava. We want to relate to you in romantic terms. We have developed that inner affinity. But Ramachandra told, no, sorry, but in this particular avatar, descent, I came in the disposition of an ideal king, and therefore I am showing the example of have accepted the vow of Eka Patni Brat, which means only one wife. So I cannot deal with you, guys. But when I will again descend in my original form as Bhagavan Sri Krishna, there you will be able to join me as gopis. So that happened. That's mentioned in scripture. So similarly, in another occasion in the forest, Ramachandra was approached by some adivasis from the Ramlila, because there are also ladies living in the forest in the Ramlila in Ayodhya. So these ladies were pulindis. So these ladies approached Ramachandra and expressed the same type of attraction than the sages of Dandakaranya. They say, we would like to serve you with in a romantic spiritual disposition. And Ramachandra said, again, sorry, but I have accepted Eka Patni Brat, only one wife, Sita, Devi. So this adivasis, this lady from the forest in Ramlila, start to cry, and they thought, let's end our lives. It has no meaning if we don't have a chance to serve our Lord, so let's end it all now. So Ramachandra could feel their lamentation, and he said, no, please, do not do that. Let's do something. I'll give you the blessing that in your next life, or actually in my next life, Ramachandra said, which is probably not their next life, there's some time between, but no problem, no rush. So when I come again, in my original form as Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, you will be born as pulindis in Vrindavan, as adivasis again, but in Braj, and you will have the chance of getting the dust of my feet and the kumkum from my feet and my beloved's feet, and you will attain the highest limit of prem and ultimate success. So, in this way, the pulindis appeared in Brajalila, with this background from the Ramlila. So let's finish sharing some extra words that our acharyas reveal on how the gopis who speak this verse lament, compare their situation with the blindness and lament. So this is the appreciation lamentation dynamics that we find in every single verse of Bhagavad Gita. So one gopi said, leave all this talk, speaking to others. If we had taken birth as Pulindis rather than Braja gopis, then we also will rub all over our bodies the kumkum which has come onto the grass from Krishna's lotus feet. Then our lives will also be worthwhile. Another Sakhi then said, what to speak of being born as Pulindis? Now it gets even more extreme. Even if we take birth as mere blades of grass in this forest, in contact with that kumkum, our lives will be successfully by getting the touch of the kumkum from the breast of the Braja gopis, which has fallen from Krishna's lotus feet. So you can see like how the heart of the gopis blossom in separation and their humility attains new reach. Now some say, oh, as we know, in every single verse, gopis are praying, let's be born as a cloud, let's be born as deer, let's be born as a cow, and here, let's be born as Pulindis. And some gopis say, no. What to speak Pulindis? Let's be born as a grass. Trinada pisunichina. Be humble like the blade of grass, which implies, or more humble than the blade of grass, which implies you have to learn something from that. Here the gopis are praying for being born as such a thing. For us, grass is the most insignificant thing we could conceive, to the point that we are all day long walking over it and we don't care. And generally, we don't think, oh, poor grass, I'm walking over you every single day, and you are presenting this nice carpet for me to walk. Thank you so much. You don't complain. You just bend and adapt with flexibility, and I'm just walking over you. We generally do not empathize that much. But the grass is there doing his service. I hear the gopis saying, let's be born in such a glorious position. In Vrindavan especially, that's not that special grass, because that receives again the kumkum from Krishna's lotus feet. So which is the conclusion by the gopis who speak this verse? Well, they think, well, in this way the Pulindis mental pain was mitigated, yet ours remains. Also, we are more unfortunate than all living beings in every way, due to being inferior even to these ladies. So again, this is the humility, unconceivable humility of someone who has the highest love. That's the paradoxical nature of love. You have it, you feel, I don't have it. Because so much can be had. So you have a glimpse, or more than a glimpse, of how much more is there. What's the nature of love itself? How all expanding is that nature? So you never dare to announce to the world, I have it. Because the very moment you say that, you think that, stop having it. That's how much love is tied with humility. If you say, I have love, basically that's not the humility corresponding to love. And love vanishes. But if you really have love, again, it's so humbling, the experience, because real love shows itself to you with unending potential and unending possibilities and unending reach. So you will always feel, even if I have it, whatever I have is so insignificant in comparison to all that I can have. So I do not dare to claim, I have it. Do you follow? It's like if you get one drop from the ocean. Yeah, you can say, I have the ocean in my hand, but I mean, if you compare what you have and what's outside of your hand, I mean, you cannot say that twice when you think a little bit more. So what to speak of the ocean of love, because it's compared like this. So that's the type of humility, no? It takes, again, it's not psychological dysfunction that you feel extremely low in comparison to others. I mean, it can be psychological dysfunction if it's expressed without love and in an unhealthy way, but there is place for that to be a symptom of obtaining highest realm. So we see many examples in our gurus, no? Jagai Madai Aite Munisi Papishta Purisi Rakita Aite Munisi Lagista Krishnadas Kavira saying, worse than Jagai Madai, and then goes to the worm, and we know how the story ends. Bhakti Natakush singing Amar Jivan and considering his life in that light, an extreme humility. So in one sense, all this humility that we see in our Sampradaya, each one of our teachers have personified in their own lives. If we study the life, and that's very useful to study the life of each one of our preceptors, because you can see humility played out in action, and how it expressed itself. But all that humility that we see in our Sampradaya, we could say that, among other examples, it's emanating from the hearts of people like the Vrajagopis and from situations like the Venu Gita. These are like the original reservoirs of that love and that humility, which is almost synonym with that love that we see in all the agents that come to our lives to represent that department. So, some ideas about this verse, and of course, like final reflection for us as sadhakas, for us as practitioners, who are not on the level of the gopis or our masters, but who want to get closer to that. And what this verse say, how the pulindis attained purnatva, became purna, became fulfilled. It's important that we, on our daily practice, which daily practice means daily contemplation also, no? It's not, again, just about doing things. But thinking, okay, I want to attain purnatva, I want to attain completeness. So, in which sense I'm not purna yet? In which sense I'm not complete? And I would like to be, and on why, on what should I do to attain that level of completeness that I have not attained? It's a good exercise to always remain custom, and be willing to embrace proper, healthy discipline, order. We need some of those things, as we mentioned before. We need some rules to play a game. It's not just I do what I want and let's have fun. It's totally boring. So similarly, we are in Srishti Lila. No? Lila means play, game. So we are in some form of game. So there are rules to play. And we as sadhakas, practitioners, are expected to behave in a certain way, to especially in the beginning times where bhava and spiritual emotions are not just flowing, overwhelming us. So we need certain discipline, certain order, and to voluntarily face, basically, how to say, what impedes, you say? We should be willing to voluntarily face what impedes our progress in a particular stage and at this given moment. We should have this type of attitude towards life. What's in my present stage impeding further progress to be all that I can be? Again, in a sustainable way, establishing long-term, middle-term, short-term goals, and so on. And how can I receive Krishna's incorporate in my life Krishna Guru's kumkum-like instructions, if you will. Because the dust of Krishna's feet, the kumkum from his feet is not different from the instruction from his mouth. No? Everything Krishna is absolute, so we have to receive those instructions properly. By doing that, we can have some hope. Even if we receive a birth such as the Pulindi ones, no, or even worse, in my case, it is possible to receive the necessary mercy, the necessary grace to end up someday as the Pulindis, end up someday next to Sri Radha, or she's playing dice with Krishna in one's gopi or gopa swarup, for the rest, as Srimati Sumati always said, for the rest of eternity. No? So that's the power of the grace of our guardians. No? Even someone with low-born situation, by the grace, can end up and the hope of attaining some particular position in the eternal service life of the Leela. So, some ideas that we want to share today to try to make whole circle with this verse, number 17. So we have three more verses remaining. So from our next meeting, which will be on Monday, we will continue with verse 18, which is a very nice verse, maybe one of the most well-known verses of the whole Venu Gita, which is a praise to Giriraj Govardhan, pronounced by Sri Radha. So here Sri Radha is there, and naturally Sri Radha's influence extends to the next verse, which is almost the last one of the Venu Gita. So that will be a special one that I think also will take minimum 2 classes. So prepare for Giriraj Tatra, Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jaya. So, Vande Nanda Brajasinam Padarinuna Vikshna Sajasam Harikatud Gitam Punati Bhuvanatriyam. We offer pranam to the song of the gopis who are so powerful, which has the power to purify the whole world. Srila Gurudev Ki Jaya, Sriman Mahaprabhu Ki Jaya, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jaya, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal Ki Jaya, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya, Sri Venu Gita Ki Jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jaya, Gaur Pramanam Hari Bol.